Chapter 58. Wherein the happiness of Oliver and his friends experiences a sudden check, spring flew swiftly by, and summer came. If the village had been beautiful at first, it was now in the full glow and luxuriance of its richness. The great trees, which had looked shrunken and bare in the earlier months, had now burst into strong life and health, and stretching forth their green arms over the thirsty ground, converted open and naked spots into choice nooks, where was a deep and pleasant shade from which to look upon the wide prospect, steeped in sunshine, which lay stretched beyond. The earth had donned her mantle of brightest green, and shed her richest perfumes abroad. It was the prime and vigor of the year, all things were glad and flourishing. Still, the same quiet life went on at the little cottage, and the same cheerful serenity prevailed among its inmates. Oliver had long since grown stout and healthy, but health or sickness made no difference in his warm feelings of a great many people. He was still the same gentle, attached, affectionate creature that he had been when pain and suffering had wasted his strength, and when he was dependent for every slight attention and comfort on those who tended him. One beautiful night, when they had taken a longer walk than was customary with them, for the day had been unusually warm, and there was a brilliant moon, and a light wind had sprung up, which was unusually refreshing. Rose had been in high spirits too, and they had walked on, in merry conversation, until they had far exceeded their ordinary bounds. Mrs. Maylie being fatigued, they returned more slowly home. The young lady, merely throwing off her simple bonnet, sat down to the piano as usual. After running abstractedly over the keys for a few minutes, she fell into a low and very solemn air, and as she played it, they heard a sound as if she were weeping. "Rose, my dear?" said the elder lady. Rose made no reply, but played a little quicker, as though the words had roused her from some painful thoughts. "Rose, my love!" cried Mrs. Maylie, rising hastily, and bending over her. "What is this?" In tears. "My dear child, what distresses you?" "Nothing," replied the young lady. "I don't know what it is, I can't describe it. But I feel not ill, my love?" interposed Mrs. Maylie. No. Oh, not ill," replied Rose, shuddering as though some deadly chillness were passing over her, while she spoke. "I shall be better presently. Close the window, pray." Oliver hastened to comply with her request. The young lady, making an effort to recover her cheerfulness, strove to play some livelier tune, but her fingers dropped powerless over the keys. Covering her face with her hands, she sank upon a sofa, and gave vent to the tears which she was now unable to repress. "My child," said the elderly lady, folding her arms about her, "I never saw you so before. I would not alarm you, if I could avoid it," rejoined Rose. "But indeed I have tried very hard, and cannot help this. I fear I am ill, and," she was, indeed, for, when candles were brought, they saw that in the very short time which had elapsed since their return home, the hue of her countenance had changed to a marble whiteness. Its expression had lost nothing of its beauty, but it was changed, and there was an anxious, haggard look about the gentle face, which it had never worn before. Another minute, and it was suffused with a crimson flush, and a heavy wildness came over the soft blue eye. Again this disappeared, like the shadow thrown by a passing cloud, and she was once more deadly pale. Oliver, who watched the old lady anxiously, observed that she was alarmed by these appearances, and so in truth was he, but seeing that she affected to make light of them, he endeavored to do the same, and they so far succeeded, that when Rose was persuaded by her aunt to retire for the night, she was in better spirits, and appeared even in better health. Assuring them that she felt certain she should rise in the morning, quite well. "I hope," said Oliver, when Mrs. Maylie returned, "that nothing is the matter?" She don't look well tonight, but apostrophe, the old lady motioned to him not to speak, and sitting herself down in a dark corner of the room, remained silent for some time. At length, she said, in a trembling voice, I hope not, Oliver. I have been very happy with her for some years. Too happy, perhaps. It may be time that I should meet with some misfortune, but I hope it is not this. Apostrophe, what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Oliver. The heavy blow, apostrophe, said the old lady, of losing the dear girl who has so long been my comfort and happiness. Apostrophe, oh, God forbid. Apostrophe, exclaimed Oliver, hastily. Amen to that, my child. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old lady, wringing her hands. Surely there is no danger of anything so dreadful? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Oliver. 2 hours ago, she was quite well. Apostrophe, she is very ill now, apostrophe, rejoined Mrs. Maylies, and will be worse, I am sure. My dear, dear Rose. Oh, what shall I do without her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she gave way to such great grief, that Oliver, suppressing his own emotion, ventured to remonstrate with her, and to beg, earnestly, that, for the sake of the dear young lady herself, she would be more calm. And consider, ma'am, apostrophe, said Oliver, as the tears forced themselves into his eyes, despite of his efforts to the contrary. Oh! Consider how young and good she is, and what pleasure and comfort she gives to all about her. I am sure certain, quite certain that, for your sake, who are so good yourself, and for her own, and for the sake of all she makes so happy, she will not die. Heaven will never let her die so young. Apostrophe, hush. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Maylie, laying her hand on Oliver's head. You think like a child, poor boy. But you teach me my duty, notwithstanding. I had forgotten it for a moment, Oliver, but I hope I may be pardoned, for I am old, and have seen enough of illness and death, to know the agony of separation from the objects of our love. I have seen enough to know that it is not always the youngest and best who are spared to those that love them, but this should give us comfort in our sorrow, for heaven is just. And such things teach us, impressively, that there is a brighter world than this, and that the passage to it is speedy. God's will be done. I love her, and he know how well. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Oliver was surprised to see that as Mrs. Maylie said these words, she checked her lamentations, as though by one effort, and drawing herself up as she spoke, became composed and firm. He was still more astonished to find that this firmness lasted, and that, under all the care and watching which ensued, Mrs. Maylie was ever ready and collected, performing all the duties which had devolved upon her, steadily, and, to all external appearances, even cheerfully. But he was young, and did not know what strong minds are capable of, under trying circumstances. How should he, when their possessors so seldom know themselves? An anxious night ensued. When morning came, Mrs. Maylie's predictions were but too well verified. Rose was in the first stage of a high and dangerous fever. We must be active, Oliver, and not give way to useless grief, apostrophe, said Mrs. Maylie, laying her finger on her lip, as she looked steadily into his face. This letter must be sent, with all possible expedition, to Mr. Losburn. It must be carried to the market town, which is not more than 4 miles off, by the footpath across the field, and thence dispatched, by an express on horseback, straight to Chertsey. The people at the inn will undertake to do this, and I can trust to you to see it done, I know. Apostrophe, Oliver could make no reply, but looked his anxiety, to be gone at once. Here is another letter, apostrophe, said Mrs. Maylie, pausing to reflect, but whether to send it now, or wait until I see how Rose goes on, I scarcely know. I would not forward it, unless I feared the worst. Apostrophe, is it for Chertsey too, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Oliver, impatient to execute his commission, and holding out his trembling hand for the letter. No, apostrophe replied the old lady, giving it to him mechanically. Oliver glanced at it, and saw that it was directed to Harry Maley Esquire, at some great lord's house in the country, where, he could not make out. Shall it go, ma'am? Asked Oliver, looking up, impatiently. I think not, replied Mrs. Maley, taking it back. I will wait until tomorrow. With these words, she gave Oliver her purse, and he started off, without more delay, at the greatest speed he could muster. Swiftly he ran across the fields, and down the little lanes which sometimes divided them. Now almost hidden by the high corn on either side, and now emerging on an open field, where the mowers and haymakers were busy at their work. Nor did he stop once, save now and then, for a few seconds, to recover breath, until he came, in a great heat, and covered with dust, on the little marketplace of the market town. Here he paused, and looked about for the inn. There were a white bank, and a red brewery, and a yellow town hall, and in one corner there was a large house, with all the wood about it painted green, before which was the sign of the George. To this he hastened, as soon as it caught his eye. He spoke to a postboy who was dozing under the gateway, and who, after hearing what he wanted, referred him to the ostler, who after hearing all he had to say again, referred him to the landlord, who was a tall gentleman in a blue neckcloth, a white hat, drab breeches, and boots with tops to match, leaning against a pump by the stable door, picking his teeth with a silver toothpick. This gentleman walked with much deliberation into the bar, to make out the bill, which took a long time making out. And after it was ready, and paid, a horse had to be saddled, and a man to be dressed, which took up 10 good minutes more. Meanwhile Oliver was in such a desperate state of impatience and anxiety, that he felt as if he could have jumped upon the horse himself, and galloped away, full tear, to the next stage. At length, all was ready, and the little parcel having been handed up, with many injunctions and entreaties for its speedy delivery, the man set spurs to his horse, and rattling over the uneven paving of the marketplace, was out of the town, and galloping along the turnpike road, in a couple of minutes. As it was something to feel certain that assistance was sent for, and that no time had been lost, Oliver hurried up the inn yard, with a somewhat lighter heart. He was turning out of the gateway, when he accidentally stumbled against a tall man wrapped in a cloak, who was at that moment coming out of the inn door. Ha! Cried the man, fixing his eyes on Oliver, and suddenly recoiling. What the devil's this? I beg your pardon, sir, said Oliver. I was in a great hurry to get home, and didn't see you were coming. Death. Muttered the man to himself, glaring at the boy with his large dark eyes. Who would have thought it? Grind him to ashes. He'd start up from a stone coffin, to come in my way. I am sorry, stammered Oliver, confused by the strange man's wild look. I hope I have not hurt you. Rot you. Murmured the man, in a horrible passion, between his clenched teeth. If I had only had the courage to say the word, I might have been free of you in a night. Curses on your head, and black death on your heart, you imp. What are you doing here? The man shook his fist, as he uttered these words incoherently. He advanced towards Oliver, as if with the intention of aiming a blow at him, but fell violently on the ground, writhing and foaming, in a fit. Oliver gazed, for a moment, at the struggles of the madman, for such he supposed him to be, and then darted into the house for help. Having seen him safely carried into the hotel, he turned his face homewards, running as fast as he could, to make up for lost time, and recalling with a great deal of astonishment and some fear, the extraordinary behavior of the person from whom he had just parted. The circumstance did not dwell in his recollection long, however. for when he reached the cottage, there was enough to occupy his mind, and to drive all considerations of self completely from his memory. Rosemary had rapidly grown worse. Before midnight she was delirious. A medical practitioner, who resided on the spot, was in constant attendance upon her, and after first seeing the patient, he had taken Mrs. Maley aside, and pronounced her disorder to be one of a most alarming nature. In fact, he said, it would be little short of a miracle if she recovered. How often did Oliver start from his bed that night, and stealing out, with noiseless footstep, to the staircase, listen for the slightest sound from the sick chamber? How often did a tremble shake his frame, and cold drops of terror start upon his brow, when a sudden trampling of feet caused him to fear that something too dreadful to think of had even then occurred? And what had been the fervency of all the prayers he had ever muttered, compared with those he poured forth now, in the agony and passion of his supplication for the life and health of the gentle creature, who was tottering on the deep grave's verge? Oh, the suspense, the fearful, acute suspense, of standing idly by while the life of one we dearly love is trembling in the balance. Oh, the racking thoughts that crowd upon the mind, and make the heart beat violently, and the breath come thick, by the force of the images they conjure up before it, the desperate anxiety to be doing something to relieve the pain, or lessen the danger, which we have no power to alleviate. The sinking of soul and spirit, which the sad remembrance of our helplessness produces. What tortures can equal these? What reflections or endeavors can, in the full tide and fever of the time, allay them? Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.